This is lecture number 5. We have been talking about the infinitely divisible distributions, and we had come to the point that the most general characteristic function for an infinitely divisible distribution had this functional form. A was a real number, B was greater than or equal to zero, D sigma X had to satisfy this constraint, but integral of d sigma x could be finite or infinite, in both cases are particularly interesting. As a special subclass of these functions, for which the characteristic function is invariant if I change the sign of t, so it has this symmetry, that would mean that the L function should also be symmetric. And if that's the case, then this most general solution simplifies. Only even terms survive. And so then that becomes B t squared plus integral 1 minus cosine tx d sigma of x. Likewise, the most general characteristic function, which has this even symmetry, has this general form. The same properties hold for d sigma of x. That hasn't changed. And I want to inform you that now this L is real, taking this thing is equal to its own real part. And one of our conditions was that this should be greater than or equal to zero. And now you can see how that is automatically fulfilled. B is non-negative, and 1 minus cosine is never negative either. So that is automatically fulfilled. Again, this corresponds to the Gaussian, or as I prefer to call it, the normal distribution, because there's no mean here. And this would correspond to the Poisson part of the problem. The section I didn't think of when I made up the syllabus, we want to do now, it's the central limit theorem. Yes.
In what sense is it Poisson?
Well, if d sigma of x had a single point source, point measure, say at x equals 3, and this is strictly Poisson, well, I'm applying it to the original situation. This is an even function of x, and it makes no sense for me not to respect that in this measure as well. So we're talking about back to this situation. If d sigma of x is spread out more, but this is still finite, then that's called a compound Poisson process. I'll just write it as P. And if this thing is infinite, that's called a generalized. Okay, well, that's a good point. Let's pause here and give an example. One of the very few examples for which we can actually calculate something other than the Gaussian. So let's take the distribution, d mu of x is rho of x dx, so it's absolutely continuous. And our distribution has the particular functional form like that. So the Fourier transform of that again, unspecified integral means plus minus infinity. This you can do by Cauchy's integral formula. There's poles in this denominator, x equal plus or minus I, and they will appear in this integral, and you get e to the minus absolute t as the answer. Now, I claim to you that e to the minus absolute t is infinitely divisible. For example, if I take the pth root of that, that is simply p over p, and this coefficient in here is merely a reflection of where this singularity appears in the denominator. I can change that 1 to some other constant, and then that would have a coefficient which is different from unity. So that is another distribution of this characteristic type. Therefore, this should be infinitely divisible. Therefore, it should lie in this family of characteristic functions. In particular, since it's an even function, absolute value of t, it should lie in here. There's no Gaussian part, so I must have the possibility that this can be written in the form d sigma of x. And the answer is I can. And here is how you do that. You take dx divided by x squared. Now there's some multiple here I don't know, so I'm going to have to put in k as an unknown constant at the moment. Nevertheless, let's change variables and get the t dependence outside of this integral. So I'm going to let x equal to t times tx equal to y. So x is y over t. And I have e to the minus k integral 1 minus cosine y. Dx is dy over t, x squared is the inverse of y squared and a t squared upstairs. The answer is going to be even, so let's do it for t positive. We'll get the answer even. So one of these t's cancel, and I get an e to the minus kt integral times 1 minus cosine y dy over y squared. And if I extend that in the symmetric way, I will get that. Then I will define k to be the inverse of whatever that final integral is. So that shows that indeed this is of that kind. This also illustrates our measure. Let me use this part of the board. Our measure here, where did it go? Here. Dx over x squared times x squared over 1 plus x squared. That's supposed to be finite. That certainly is true. That's this condition over here. But this is an example where dx over x squared diverges. So that's a generalized Poisson process. Partially answer the question? So for the latecomers, we have introduced the even part of our characteristic function, taken it to be, we drop out all the terms which are odd in t, and we see that this is manifestly positive because b cannot be negative and 1 minus cosine is always positive. And then we gave an example of the so-called Cauchy distribution, and its Fourier transform looking like that, which arises from residues. And then we showed but that it is indeed of this particular form, where our measure was k sub constant dx over x squared, and k was defined to be the inverse of that particular integral. So, any questions on that? Because we're going to change sections here. Okay, central limit theorem and its avoidance. You will see a certain amount of similarity between the discussion in 2.5 now about the central limit theorem and the discussion in section 2.4 about the infinitely divisible situation. We come at rather the same problem. We will come up with much the same answer, looked at it from slightly different points of view. Okay. So we're going to study the sum of independent, identically distributed. We won't actually talk about these too much more, but it is useful for you perhaps to know that in the literature, this gets its own abbreviation, IID, identically independent distributions. And so, had I used that from the first introduction, then I could have saved a lot of chalk, but it didn't happen. Anyway, when you read, you might come across that symbol. We're going to make some simplifying assumptions. Going to assume mu for the y variable to be absolutely continuous. So mu equals mu absolutely continuous for capital Y. I'm going to assume that it is symmetric, which means that rho of minus y equals rho of plus y. And as a consequence, all of the odd moments would be zero, just to make life easy for us. We're going to assume all the moments exist. Assume that the distribution of the y variable actually depends on how many n there are. So as I increase this n, which I will do, the distribution of the individual y variables will change. Characteristic function for the x variable. Equally well put a subscript here as well, but I don't bother with that. That's e to the it summation yp, 1 to n. These are independent variables, so they factor. They are all identical, so each one is the same, so I just raise that to the nth power, but the distribution itself will depend on n. So this quantity is also equal to one, let's do it this way first. I expand that out in power series, one plus ity plus I squared t squared over 2y squared plus I cubed t cubed over 3 factorial y cubed. I'll stop at this point. 4 factorial y fourth. All to n, n of the n dependence of that and the nth power. So these averages can come inside. So I have 1, average of y is 0, then I have t squared over 2, y squared sub n, t cubed, y cubed average is 0, so then I have the t fourth. All to power n. And I'm now interested in taking the limit as n gets large. And I assert to you, there are two qualitatively different results. So interested in n going to infinity, two qualitatively different answers. The first one should be a gut reaction for you, familiar to you. The central limit theorem means things should go Gaussian. Let's look at that Gaussian behavior. I'm going to draw the distribution rho n of y approximately. And it's going to be a kind of a general structure. I'm only going to put one kind of constraint on this structure. So it has to be even. So I have to draw it some kind of even function. Suppose that's what it looks like. And I'm going to say that the width here is of order 1 over square root of n. I told you this distribution depends on n. So as n gets larger, whatever this shape is, it gets narrower. It doesn't have to preserve the shape. I'm not so interested that this particular shape is just rescaled. It can change a little bit too. But the width is like that. Now, of course, the area under here, being a probability distribution, the area is unity. And that means that the height, in order for this times this roughly to be 1, this should be an order square root of n higher. So let's make an estimate on what y squared is in this distribution. Let's say it's proportional to what? If this width of this distribution is order 1 over root n, what is the average of y squared going to be proportional to? Any guesses? If y is an order 1 over root n, then y squared 1 over n. Thank you. So let's say that that is some constant a divided by n. Now, this puts a very strong limit that it actually has this n dependence. I don't really care that it's exactly like n, but I do want it to be like n at infinity. So there could be 16 over n squared and things like that, which would get small relative to this term. But this is the essential fact to pull up. Now, since you were so good in determining what y squared average was, let's tell me what y to the fourth power is. Anybody?
Absolutely brilliant.
Square. Okay, so that's something else over n squared. And great sir, who did it? Can you do one more?
And Dave Hume.
Okay. So, y to the 2m is proportional to 1 over n to the m. However, when we put that kind of information into this expression, and then take n huge, take the limit as n goes to infinity, only this first term is order 1 over n. This is 1 over n squared. That will simply fall out in relation to this. And the limit in that form, let's call that limit C of T. Lim everything else we've been talking about will be e to the minus, we'll call that thing a, t squared over 2 times a, where a is defined as the limit n to infinity, not of y squared by itself, but of n times that. That n arising, as you remember from exponential business, this n and the y squared going like 1 over n cancels that and gives me the constant out of that. So this is the Gaussian. Indeed, since I've made a symmetric assumption in my problem, this is a normal distribution. And it didn't matter that this was not a Gaussian distribution to begin with. I got a Gaussian answer, period. Let us look then at the second qualitative way in which we can play this game. Poisson behavior. Again, I'm going to draw a qualitative description of the general distribution rho n of y. There is a central peak, like we had before. Again, I don't care what it does in detail. It has to be symmetric to play the game. And then there is a long, shallow, a broad shoulder. This is of order 1 over square root of n, again, or it can even be smaller. I now have to share the area between this central pike and the rest of this. The area here now is not 1, but it is 1 minus 1 over n. So that's not the full integral. I have 1 over n's worth of area left to distribute. And I distribute that down here by saying that this width is of order 1, independent of n, and the height of this function is 1 over n. So, and I also say roughly that the area in this shoulder is unity, but when I multiply it by an amplitude 1 over n, it gets smaller, and that total that area now under this part, so we can say that, we better say that, area here is 1 over n. And that adds to the area in the middle to give me total unit area.
How did you split the areas into 1 minus 1 over n and 1 over n?
I don't know what you mean by how.
No, was that your assumption or?
Yeah, sure. This was my assumption over here, that it looked like that.
No. What I mean is, how did you assume that the peak has an area 1 minus 1 over n and the horizontal part?
Well, because I wanted this to have a height of 1 over n, but have an area 1 over n. Period. That's what I wanted. So I had to have an area 1 minus 1 over n left over. Okay, so let's see what that does for us. Okay. Do we have a new volunteer for our, okay, what's y squared averaged?
1/n².
Huh?
1/n².
Why do you say 1/n²? Anybody else want to try?
1/n³.
It's still 1/n. There is this middle part, which has almost 1 here. So it's just like the same as before. Plus, throw that part away. Then the y squared would get a contribution from this shoulder, which would, if this was unit area, would be order 1. But no, it has area 1/n. So it too contributes to this. So there are two parts, one from peak plus shoulder. And as I say, this can even be smaller. I can make this order 1/n. I still wanted to have the area here. And if I made it even narrower, but still the same area, then the peak would not contribute to that. Because the width is now 1/n, and when I square that, that's 1/n², supporting your original conclusion. Okay, that's good. So that's like an a over an n again. Now comes the interesting part. What is this guy? 4th power, 1/n. Any volunteers?
Come on. Who?
1/n. Where does that come from? Oh, you're just guessing, or you have a clear insight as to what's the origin of that? Okay, that comes not from the central spring.
It comes from the wing.
That comes from the wings. All from the shoulder. Y6th.
Same
shoulder, same thing. Everything is uniformly small. Uniform, independent of how many moments there are. They're all 1/n. 1/n, I'm going to put a prime here and divide by that n. Prime here and divide by that n. And then I take that n away because I've got the, what I will call the full n dependence out of it. Everybody understand what I've just done? I've said that these things are some constant divided by n, and I call that constant that, etc. Okay, now when I take the limit n to infinity, I get e to the minus t squared over 2 y squared prime plus t to the 4th over 4 factorial y 4th prime, etc. And that is equal to e to the ity minus 1 prime. Let's expand it. There's a 1 here, which kills the 1. The odd terms would disappear anyway because we have an even thing. The first term is minus t squared over 2 y squared prime. There it is. The cube is out. The 4th power is plus t to the 4th over 4 factorial y to the 4th. Now, let's realize that by diagonalizing the y, as we like to say. I'm going to change the sign, too. Recognize that things are even and put in a suitable measure corresponding to that. And that thing, you see, is exactly this part of the problem. What's so? What we had derived just moments ago, the Gaussian behavior was the other part of this problem. So, here and here. Now, it's not a real surprise that these two problems should be so close to each other. After all, each of them is looking for a decomposition of X into independent and identically distributed random variables. We took the, from the point of view of the infinitely divisible situation, we worked straight away with a characteristic function to find all the possible characteristic functions that could have that property. Here, however, we have worked with the distributions. Is any of those pictures on the board? Here's one. We worked with the distributions. Here is one of those pictures. This is how the Y had to be distributed as a function of N in order that we got the Poisson answer and therefore beat the intuitive response of the central limit theorem that all other distributions, like we had before, when people were correct in their assessment of the calculations of the width, that all of those gave us strictly a Gaussian. So there's a way around the Gaussian, and that's the Poisson distribution.
And so does this mean that the central limit theorem, the way we originally heard it formulated, is not a complete theorem?
People do things slightly differently. They will tell you, let me define it this way. So they put they build in their square root of n that is going to give them the this width. Oh, I do have that one on the board. They build into that square root of n that property already. And then this distribution is fixed after that. It doesn't depend on n. So once you've done that, you have pre-committed the form in which n enters that y. When you do that, you're stuck with the Gaussian.
So then even if yn would have a shoulder, it would still...
The shoulder would have to be squeezed in. Right, right. My shoulder is not squeezed in. Okay. Now, it's interesting. I grew up with these two ideas, central limit theorem and infinitely divisible. And to be honest with you, I must confess, only preparing for this very, very lecture, did I appreciate how close the two guys really were. And that it's our mental fixation, or our historical treatment of the subject, that says central limit theorem Gaussian. That's all there is, you know. And nobody talks about this way to beat it. And yet, if you approach it, as I had known to do, through the infinitely divisible, Gaussian and Poisson come in an equal dosage. So in truth, they're not that far apart, these two concepts. That's why I add this extra section. And just as a personal note, I have profited off the Poisson distribution for much of my career. So I think it's worth paying a little homage back to the poor baby. All right. So any questions? We're going to leave this chapter. I do want to reward my faithful audience by passing out problem set number one. I think I have enough for all attendees,
but I'm really only interested in seeing written solutions from people who take the course for credit.
And today is a Friday. Why don't we shoot for 1 week if from today, so that would be 23rd. And if come 21 you scream and yell, then we'll think of something way to appease you. Okay. So the next chapter we want to talk about is chapter 3. And that is called infinite dimensional integrals. Section 3.1, basics. We're going to use a very simple elementary example, a normal. That's a mean zero Gaussian distribution. Pretty much to learn from in this chapter. And I want to emphasize to you that things you know for n less than infinity do not always hold when n equals infinity. So let's start easy. Let's take a Gaussian. That's a normal distribution, dxn. I'm going to take a product of these from 1 to capital N. And capital N is finite. So I sum here, n equals 1 to capital N. I normalize that with a b over 2 pi to the n by 2. And call that my n-dimensional probability measure. It is clearly something you recognize. But let's talk about the support of mu n. Support is where the object lives. I want you to tell me where it lives. Suppose it was just one integral first. Just capital N was 1, so there was only one x at all. Where would that integral live? Yes, I saw that. You have an answer?
The real line.
He says the real line. Okay. So the support of one of them would be the real line. So what do we say for N of them? Right. Support is the entire space Rn. Okay. I've arranged this constant, hopefully, at least that's my intention, so that the integral is unity. And therefore the limit of those unities is unity.
What is that, V over?
B over 2 pi, is it pi? This should be related to the normalization we found in the very first lecture where we did a simple Gaussian answer. And then the question is, in what sense, or is there any sense, is d mu n of x limit n to infinity equal to some measure on an infinite sequences. Okay, so let's suppose naively that this thing is supposed to be that. Therefore, that would be b over 2 pi to power infinite, e to the minus b over 2, sum n equals 1 to infinity, xn squared, product n equals 1 to infinity, dxn. You will see in the literature expressions of this kind. You may not see that. They may call that n, normalization. But you will certainly see this, and you will certainly see that. This thing is wrong on several accounts, but that doesn't mean it's not useful. We have to understand what's really good about it and what we should be careful about. Okay, let's look at this first guy. So A.
Doesn't this have anything to do with the Buckner's theorem you proved? You didn't prove, but.
We're going to come back to Buckner's theorem later in this chapter, and you'll see a very beautiful, modern, very modern result about that. Okay? Suppose the number B is bigger than 2 pi, and that ratio is bigger than 1 raised to the infinity. So, first factor, call that the A factor. A factor equals infinity. If B is less than 2 pi, that factor is less than 1 raised to the infinite power, it's actually 0. Well, why not choose B equals 2 pi? Then that quotient's 1, that's okay. So that looks nicer. So can we do that? Well, that would leave us with this problem. And the question is, does this make a measure? Since we're interested now in the second term here, we're going to assume we made this guy finite by choosing B something. We're going to make this guy well-behaved. How do we do that? We restrict the sequences. And we say that the sequences xn squared, n equals 1 to infinity, have to do what? If I want this to be a reasonable answer, converge. Come on. Don't be afraid. Okay, so that's my assumption. I'm going to say that my measure, d mu of x, is supported on sequences for which this is true. That's my assumption.
Do you also mean that the sum is not zero?
What sum? X, sum of the xn squared?
No, it's okay, never mind.
They don't cancel, they're all positive. It could be zero, that would be a point in here where all the x's were zero, that's a legitimate point. So now I say to myself, that's my assumption. Therefore, I have e to the minus b over 2 summation n equals 1 to infinity xn squared d n equals 1 to infinity dxn. I could do this calculation, maybe I should, by finite numbers. And I'm going to average something else with it. I'm going to put in a c. Let's go back to the B term, since insisting that the sum of these squares was finite was to help this term, it really wasn't so critical what the value of B was. Let's go back to here. And that is equal to, in this measure that we're presuming works, e to the minus c over 2 summation 1 to n xn squared. Okay, now take the limit as n goes to infinity.
Wait, John, yeah. How did the b's get back into this group? You took them out by b is equal to 5.
Okay, that was only here. That was only.
It was just to focus on the.
Just to focus on this term. Now I've.
And so you know the support.
I've arrived at this is the important issue. That was independent of B. Let's go back to a general B. The argument I'm about to give is insensitive to the magnitude of B, but it's useful. Okay. So this is an integral we can do. If the C were out, it would be normalized. So that means the B that is here is picking up a b in the denominator that is here, and that is raised to the n by 2 power. And we're going to take the limit n to infinity. However, with the c present, the b that comes in the denominator gets a B plus a C.
I'm just evaluating the integral for you in a trivial, quick way.
So that is 1 over 1 plus C over B, both positive numbers, raised to the infinite power, which is 0. Make sure we agree on that and understand. So we have learned that e to the minus c over 2, summation xn squared 1 to infinity, e to the minus c over 2, summation 1 to infinity xn squared d mu of x, our proposed mu, I'm going to put it in another quotation mark, equals 0. Things we can do. We can say, by golly, we still insist that the support of our measure is that. Conclusion is that this mu in quotation marks will only be finitely added. It is not a true, genuine measure. Second thing is, I can say, oh, if this is 0, that means sum xn squared actually equals infinity almost everywhere. For almost all points in the support of my measure, this sum has got to be infinity. That's why this average gives me 0. Furthermore, it says that the sum where xn squared is finite has measure 0. Because if there was some measure in this space for which this answer was finite, then this answer could not be 0. So in point of fact, if there is a measure under here, and there is, this measure must have almost all its points in its support with this property, and in fact, it's the points in its, wherever this is true, enter with measure 0, and can be neglected. Can be neglected. So the point which we've just briefly talked about, which is the 0, all the points equals 0, is in this part and is not important to the calculation. That is the maximum peak of this function, with a b, even with a b, but it's not in a true point of support of the measure. Yes, sir?
If you consider a small, if you consider a box of length 1 in each of the ends, yes, then that has a finite volume. Okay, not in this measure.
That's what we're going to talk about that right here. When we just argued that this is no good because this forces the measure to be only finitely additive. And trust me, in the last 6 years, there's been a huge, thick paper written on...
What I'm asking is, if you consider that box...
Box. Of 0, 1?
Of 0 to 1 in,
yes,
each direction. Then... that has a finite volume and it's not a measure 0 quantity.
Oh, okay, we're going to raise exactly your question. We're going to integrate this from 0 to 1, forgetting all this stuff. We're going to look at C, this guy by itself.
Right. So if you integrate it with that measure, you will get 0?
Hang on, we'll just wait till the next time because we're out of time.
And we'll talk about that next time. Okay? Can I get from you? Yeah.
Okay, so everybody look at the homework, and if you have questions, of course, get to me as soon as you can and discuss.